Checking in again with State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy for our weekly update on what's going on in all things state and Quincy. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again on another beautiful pre-rain Friday.
Yeah, so far so good here. We're knocking on all kinds of wood for January because I'm not a big fan of the winter weather. So if this stays like this, I'm happy.
Well, I think I'm enjoying the warmer weather right now, and it's what we call the Colonel seasonal winter. And, last year we didn't have enough rain, as we saw from the drought stuff. So, having a little more rain and, maybe a few days of snow would be nice just to break up the, remind us that it is winter, break up the kind of the rain event. Okay, maybe not. Right? Look at your face. We won't wish for snow then.
Basically. No, if we could arrange it like on a Saturday morning or something, that'd be okay. But other than that, no. Speaking of climate, what happened? The governor vetoed the climate bill, Jackie.
Yeah, I kind of was talking to my staff about this, and I had put down odds that he would sign the climate bill. The bill is pretty much a lot of what he wanted. Most of the dates have been moved, again, closer to reaching carbon neutral goals, the desire to acquire more big wind, which we approved a couple of years back, 4 years? It's 4 years now, actually. I think about 4 years back, we approved big wind. Off the shore of Block Island down there was we're the biggest purchaser of that project, which still hasn't put a windmill in the water yet, but it's coming. We've been working on things like, hydro, for example. Hydro-Quebec is the winning bid out of Canada. We're still working on that transmission line issue via Maine and, other types of renewable energy options to diversify our energy portfolio and move us slowly towards carbon net neutral. Things like car recharging stations are talked more about in this bill than we have in the past. But at the same time, though, there's been some changes regarding the Board of Building Registration, the Board of Building Regulators, not registration, Board of Building Regulators, composition, changes regarding how we do future construction. I think that probably spooked the business community, development community in particular, to ask the governor to redo it. For those who don't know, when you do this is not a fictional statement. The bigger the building, the more requirements they have regarding how it's constructed shifts the cost of the building. So right now, the building Board of Building Regulators do a lot of their, do not. It's basically priority number one is safety. So when they do building construction regulation, number one priority is safety. And a lot of the desires try to move them towards addressing more green standards as part of looking at the overall safety. And that does add costs. It's not as bad as it used to be. I remember when going to a full green building would cost you 30 to 40% on top of the base.
Wow.
That number has been shrinking over the years as better technology has arisen and there's more developers becoming better at identifying and making buildings more energy efficient. And we're talking about not just about electricity. We're talking about better insulation. We're talking about better way windows are set up and so forth. Obviously, if you're in a very dark zone of a lot of trees, building a two-story house, well, it doesn't matter how many windows you have. It ain't going to help you.
Right.
But if you are in the right spots, you can configure the building for future development and things like solar panels and so forth if there's a desire to move forward on that, particularly on new construction. So I think that really did spook that end of the business community. And in this COVID world, definitely watch, I've said this before, commercial business prices, particularly in Boston, drop like a stone. Construction went through very quickly after COVID lockdown ended, through the winter. And that's helping keeping people employed as we're still struggling in this economy. So I think that was actually another one of the big factors is that the construction industry is a major part of the industry. If they're unable to get financing for it, because right now financing is hard. I think the short-term issues is really kind of freaking people out right now.
Yeah. I wanted to get your take on President-elect Joe Biden's American recovery plan that he outlined.
Yeah, I watched a bit of the speech yesterday and caught some of the news on that. I think a lot of it, I think we expected at some level. I mean, increased COVID testing, the desire to get 100 million doses out, which really means 50 million people. And the census is estimating, 320, but I think it's close to 340 million because people don't always fill the census form. And there's a whole lot of people for a myriad of reasons don't, unfortunately. We're still talking a very fractional part of the population. I mean, 50 million out of 320, 340 million people, you know, that's still a long way to go to herd immunity, which has to be over 70% plus. I still believe 90% is the need for herd immunity. So it's still very ambitious. The Trump administration did release, you know, all these second doses in advance, relying on first dose to provide a greater degree of protection until the second booster shot is made available. This is a moving science, which is kind of making me a little nervous because, like, well, you need two shots, but one's okay, but it's more effective too. We have to take two within 21 days. So I'm kind of like, okay, I know what you're saying to me, but what does that mean?
Right.
So I do encourage everyone to take the vaccine. I do encourage everyone to, you know, seek the doctor to, before they take vaccines, if they're very concerned about it, talk to your doctors first. I very much encourage that. But I am, I think, confused as everybody else regarding the messaging. I mean, the desire from Biden to want to provide direct assistance to states and cities and towns from the federal government is very welcomed. We talked about this all through the fall about the budget and how we're not going to feel the big economic impacts on revenue shortfall until fiscal year 22. We're in fiscal year 21 right now. So, you know, all the people have lost their jobs, the businesses are closed. That comes full bore in terms of tax revenue in FY 22. Why do I say that? Because FY 21 is based on FY 20's estimates.
Yep.
And we, you know, even though the pandemic hit and there was high unemployment during the summertime, you know, we also have unemployment, but you actually have to get tax on unemployment insurance. So people who are getting unemployment, you're going to have to pay taxes in April, just to warn you all right now. So get ready.
Right. That's a good tip, actually. Hopefully they're having them taken out. If not, they're going to be in for a terrible surprise.
Absolutely. So please, if you're listening to this, you got unemployment benefits, be sure to look at your tax impact. But the winter time now, right, this time period is where we expect to have the largest, unfortunately, unemployment spike, as well as a business impact. The initial spike was caused by the lockdown. This is the whole hospitality impact, as you know, would be restaurants, tour guides, and so forth, going through the winter months. And we're out of Christmas, and there's no other big retail month. You get the cars, and car sales are very slow because, A, getting cars manufactured is very challenging. Two, people have a lot of money. So there's a lot of challenges in sales, retail sales coming to springtime, in the winter and springtime. So, you know, any type of assistance we can get from the feds would be very, very helpful. You know, you talked about another stimulus check. I get it. I mean, the thing that's really, people need to understand with the stimulus check right now is the fact that there are parts of the country where, you know, $2,000, $600, $1,400, whatever the amount is, goes a very long way. So I do know rental costs up here are extraordinarily high. But if you're somewhere in the, you know, lower cost of living areas of the country, you know, that could be 3 months rent.
Yes. Yep.
And then that creates a degree of stability as people are trying to figure out how to get back on their feet. And as unemployment benefits were extended under the previous stimulus assigned after Christmas by President Trump, you know, that's another holdover. And it's kind of really unfortunate because unemployment isn't doing it. And even if you have a job, you know, you may have had reduced hours because of COVID. And the result, if your hourly wage, reduced pay. And since we're a commercial-based economy, I can't emphasize enough, we're a commercial-based economy, meaning it's consumer-driven, not manufacturing-driven economy in this country. Not circulating money through the economy only hurts everybody in the economy. And with less disposable income and us focusing on the essentials, you know, this could be, it's problematic. And I'm not saying people should go and buy luxury goods. I'm not suggesting that. But I mean, you want to be able to get what you need. So you don't want to choose between food and medicine. You don't want to end up choosing against, you know, figure out how to pay your rent versus paying your electric bill. And the stimulus checks will give you a bit of coverage for another short period of time while you're still trying to figure out how to manage everything. So I didn't like it when Bush did this after 9/11. I thought it was too gimmicky. Remember the $500 checks we got back then?
Do you remember those? Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was too gimmicky, and I'm not a huge fan of these direct cash payments, you know, as opposed to things like tax credits or deductions on your income taxes. But this is not like any other time period. This is not a normal economic impact period. So We'll see if Congress.
He called it, Biden called it dire right now, unless something is done quickly. So.
Well, the forgotten part of America is what Biden's focusing on, you know, and I get these constituent calls that the, you know, audience here don't hear or see about. It isn't like, and I say this all the time, it isn't like your neighbor's telling you all their financial problems and the impacts they have. It's not like, you know, the guy next door to you is, you know, saying that, you know, I lost a job or, you know, they're having all these challenges. They end up coming to my doorstep, not your doorstep. And because it's a private issue and it's their problem to solve. And they may first time ever needing government benefits, which is what happens. Majority of folks that contact us are first time callers, for lack of a better way to put it. They try to learn how to use the system, and the system is overwhelmed. Everybody has now experienced at some level a challenge with the social safety net. It's overwhelmed. I'm trying to provide, you know, customer service to people. So, you know, those are some of the big, big high points of that. I mean, he wants to get kids back in school, the need for more testing. We're going to need testing even you get the vaccine because, again, herd immunity is far, far away. We still have to wear masks and so forth. And now with new variants, this virus coming up, we don't know if this is going to be a problem for vaccine development later or not. But given the fact we're living in the most technology advanced era in medicine ever known, you know, we've been very fortunate on our ability to respond quickly to this. So I suspect whatever variants may come up, you know, the scientific community will be able to also rapidly respond, since now we have a baseline we're doing. So some of the big things, you know, that Biden's looking at, the stuff that we should have been focusing on this past fall, and we did it on the federal level. And from our level at the state, you know, and even down to Maricopa and the city, you know, whatever trickles down from Washington, D.C. will affect us and affect our future plans and how we budget and prepare. So, but I mean, the vaccine itself, I, you know, we talked with Secretary Sutter this week about vaccine, and at $62 per dose is the current price Massachusetts is getting. It's $45 is covered by Medicare. So we got to figure out how to cover the remainder ourselves. So, you know, affect, you know, any kind of financial system for the federal government would be helpful. That's an additional cost that was unexpected. So it isn't hard. You know, 62 minus 45 times 6.7 million, you guys can do the math at home. It is short formulas. So
yeah, tremendous cost, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's per dose. So times two. But no, is that per dose? No, that's the total dosage. Sorry. It is the total dosage. So you know, you can figure out the math on your own. That's status.
I guess Johnson & Johnson's working on a single dose vaccine, so that looks interesting.
Yeah, single dose size Johnson & Johnson. You know, the China vaccine's out in many other parts of the world, but as you know, they never got phase three testing public results, so we don't really understand how that works in the scientific community. Hopefully, they'll release their data at some point, and people can do comparisons with Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, you know, and Moderna. The Russians have one too, but no one knows what that really does. So, you know, the more data that's put out in public in the scientific community, the more comparisons can be made. And I know everybody's using relatively the same type of technology to make this. So I can't see how a lot of these processes aren't similar, because mm-hmm. everyone was following on the same path anyway.
Right. From your point of view, Tacky, state lawmakers, when are you in line for a vaccination?
I'm phase three at the bottom. Are you kidding me? Okay. I'm well under 75. We talked about my food allergies, and I do, you know, have a little bit of high blood pressure, but I do not count as a major health problem. I actually am very concerned about the shots solution. The RNA doesn't scare me. It's whatever the liquid they put it in does, because I have a number of allergies, including one is soy. And soy, I discovered, is a very common delivery mechanism for lots of things, because your body absorbs soy very easily. Mm. Protein solution with less effects. So I'm hoping it doesn't have any, I'm doubtful it will, but I'm hoping it doesn't have anything affects my food allergies, which is a conversation we're going to have with my doctor as I come into, you know, phase three, supposedly this July. But, you know, I'm not an optimistic human being, as people heard from my podcast. So we're probably going to go probably into the summer, probably later. My mom is over 75. She does have cancer. So her doctors are recommending that she gets her shot. It's her phase two comes online They will only know when she can be called in when they actually have vaccine at Tufts Medical Center. So until they know, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's the big wait right now, not only here, but across the country.
Yeah, older legislators, you know, over 75, and there are some that are over 75, you know, will, you know, be able to get vaccinated as part of phase two. But as younger folks with no major health conditions are at the bottom. So we're not Congress. There's no line skipping for us.
Of course, next week is the inauguration, and there's been talk about security threats in every state. What are you hearing on Beacon Hill?
We got a security briefing this week for legislators to give us the quick update. And currently, the state of security plus state police plus FBI plus the regional state police task force plus the fusion center where they collect all the data in one spot plus the online, you know, monitoring shows no credible threats to the state house at the moment. We all know, I'm working from home. All of us being encouraged to work at home. Two more house members that were in the state house now has COVID, which people wonder why I'm not going to the state house because it's, you know, people are coming in with COVID. I mean, I do not know how to say this any other way. Right now, you know, there is minimal staffing. So God forbid something happens and like I won't get hurt. I mean, it won't be a full state house where you have tourists going around, people doing business, staff, myself, and the building can swell up to 2,000 people during the height of a day. You know, it's very, very busy. So right now, no credible threats. They have up the security in plainclothes, state troopers and other security people and DCR, I'm dating myself, DCR right. Majors.
Yep.
They are likely to step up actual physical presence, being people in uniform and vehicles around the state house as we go to inauguration day. There's been no direct threats against any legislator, to their knowledge at the moment. Obviously, if there is a threat to us, or a phone call, email, or things taped to our door, notify the police right away, both local, state, and the state house security. If something does happen at our homes, which I do not anticipate it will, obviously call 911 is the priority. And there is revamping of their security right now because the fact we are home. So they recognize there's got to be greater outreach with our home community police, that kind of stuff. Right now there's nothing going on, and they tell us that these extreme groups, we don't have many here. So we're fortunate on that front. But states like Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Washington State, Oregon State, lots of other places have evacuated their buildings already in anticipation for next week, as well as increasing police security and National Guard security. And places like Michigan already had a near overrun. Oregon did have an overrun. People just stormed the state house. And, other government officials, particularly in Georgia, have been evacuated to safer locations because of threats made. And frankly, stimulated by President Trump. The more he makes these allegations, the more people feel emboldened that we have to follow the president's orders, or president says this, we better do it. And they think they've been empowered to take acts against government officials at the state and local level. So so we'll see. I mean, I myself have not received any threats in any form. I hope not to. But you don't know. It's a strange world. Mm. It's been a very strange world right now.
What do you think about Governor sending National Guard troops from Massachusetts to Washington?
I think the governor was waiting to see what the security threat in Massachusetts was before he sent National Guard troops down. Given the fact he sent 500 troops down to D.C. indicates that we do not have any credible threats. I'm still very confident between the local police, the state police, and remaining National Guard. State House would be secured. Boston City Hall is probably another very likely target. I mean, it's an obvious major city target. I think it would be relatively peaceful. I think the concern is kind of the outliers when you have one or two people that's not on social media spewing threats decide to take action on their own. A lot of the major terrorist events, or even sadly like a Nashville suicide event, doesn't involve large groups of people like you saw in the riot in D.C. certainly isolated folks, handful of folks, you know, two people with the Boston bombing, you know, 11 people-ish on the 9/11 attacks, you know, that kind of stuff. Oklahoma was two people, Timmy McVeigh. Those two people in Oklahoma. So, I mean, that's the bigger concern by security. So they'll be on the lookout for, you know, protection road agents that off the internet radar, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's kind of the greater concern in the short term. And like I said, we'll see if there's any threats against any government officials.
Legislature's now in the new session. So what's on the agenda for your district, Tacky?
Well, the agenda is right now filing bills. Our bill filing deadline is February 19th. To the Speaker and Senate President agreed to a joint rule order to extend the deadline of filing deadlines. It was supposed to be today, actually, was the normal deadline under joint rules. Number of good reasons. One, because we submitted our bills so late to the governor, a lot of outside section included bills that people have filed in the past. For example, the Student Loan Bill of Rights, Student Loan Borrowing Assistance Program was part of the Economic Development Bill that the governor signed into law. So people don't have to file that bill again. So that gives us ability to, you know, figure out what happened and just take things off the list. Secondly, while working remotely, this has been of a challenge, trying to figure out how to communicate with staff on bills. I have some law books I brought home from the office, but I didn't bring home, you know, all 26 volumes. So we won't have like line numbers that you see in the books that you don't get on the online version. So it's gonna be, we're gonna have to do a little bit of adjustment to how we identify what part of law we're changing. New rush freshmen do not get the benefit of the bullpen. We generally put all the freshmen in one room. It's a good way for them to bond until offices are ready for them, but also easy to put support services for bill filing in one place, for example. So they have to learn the law system. They have to learn how to use the, how to draft the bill system. They have to read all the basic manuals. And basically, frankly, you actually need to call one of the senior members or staff from another office to help you out. That is not available. So extension of deadline makes so much sense. And as a reflection of the fact that, you know, Speaker Mariano or Speaker Rod, as I like to call it, you know, the ability to think forward on real logistic issues in the building and work of the Senate on agreeing on a date. The fact they did an opening day is a good sign that Ron is able to immediately create a good working relationship on a legitimate logistical issue.
Who's going to be new majority leader now?
Good question. We don't know. One of the interesting things is that if you go on the state website for House leadership, it's just Ron's face there.
He's leading the entire house right now.
Exactly. So I was like, look, it's like, hey, they took everybody's name off.
Well, eventually it's going to have to be a special election, obviously, but then an appointment right for majority leader.
That's correct. I mean, right now we're going to have to debate the rules. That's the first major debate we're going to have. It won't occur to probably after the inaugural on the 20th, given the circumstances. We trust that they will want to keep the State House building as minimal as possible. And when we do have a session, there is an increase of people in the building to that are minimal, meaning the central service people. So I suspect probably the 27th in that zone or early February, like what, February 6th area, will be a rules debate. The rules debate are two forms. There's a House rules that governs the internal functioning of the House. So, you know, think of it as kind of the House handbook in many ways, on how the chamber will function. And then there's the joint rules. And the joint rules create the committees. So we have joint committees that are chaired by a senator and a representative. So it's combined senator and House members. And it's not like Congress where you have separated Senate and House committees. And then you have to, like, move things up and down like a weird system back and forth. Here it's one committee structure. The Senate president and the speaker may, if they want to, assemble new committees, disassemble existing committees. And I do not know what the conversation is on whether they're going to keep the same structure or change the structure around. Once joint committee has agreed upon between the House and Senate, which means there's going to be a mini conference committee to discuss this between the two branches about what they want in the end, then the speaker can recommend committee assignments to the Democratic caucus as a slate, and the caucus can debate that in caucus if they want. The Democratic caucus can go and say, I want this, I want that, which is very rare, doesn't happen. very often our level, unlike DC, we actively lobby fellow members for a position. And then Democrats vote on that and committees are formed and, you know, then we have to move offices and whatnot. And that includes the majority leader. Yeah. So there's the majority leader, there's the speaker pro tem, there's 3 second assistant leaders, the 4 floor leaders, you know, chair of ways and means, which I presume will stay Aaron Meckowitz because he's not going to run for mayor now. We got to know this yesterday. And the third reading chair. So even prior to the election to speaker, we already had vacancies caused by people retiring or moving on. So that includes healthcare finance chair, labor and workforce, third reading, steering and policy, and a number of vice chairs on top of that, and 2 floor leaders too. So Ron actually had vacancies already if it was still status quo. But new speaker, new rules, new house, new operational methods. So every position, including my own, is up for grabs. So don't presume that just because I have a very long relationship with Ron and that I'm part of Quincy delegation, people should not presume anything about my future.
Okay.
Ron's going to make the best decision possible that makes sense for the house. And I would just trust him to do that.
Okay. Now, I was just thinking, the as you well know, the right to repair law passed last fall. Is that law now?
No, the AG has, well, it is law. It's kind of a yes, no answer. Yes, it's law. The AG has suspended enforcement of the law. It is currently before the First Circuit U.S. court.
Oh.
They look for an injunction, and they're looking to repeal the law based on the Commerce Clause and federal preemption over over cars. The feds have jurisdiction over vehicle safety and vehicle emissions and vehicle construction. I mean, that's all federal. So they're looking to try to, the manufacturers try to claim preemption on right to repair and including the intellectual property associated with it, which is governed by federal law.
Oh, okay. All right. So stay tuned for that one. See how the courts rule on that.
Yeah, this is going to take a while. Interesting enough, First Circuit actually has a lot of experience with intellectual property. Massachusetts is an intellectual property state.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. High technology and biotech, they get a lot of these cases. So it is really right up their alley regarding looking at stuff like this. I think, but, you know, I looked at some of the materials being sent to us on the briefs and whatnot, and it's an interesting argument. So this could take quite a bit of time. And it will set the precedent for other similar right to repair, which isn't really right to repair. It's really telemetric access to your car. But that we already talked about this in the past. About.
Right. Yeah. We won't go down that road.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not right to repair. It's something else they covered up with a fancy name. But, yeah, so we'll see how it goes. This could take on a few years, maybe, if they go through the appeals process, depending who wins or loses. And determines whether or not to be the civil legislature filed in other states.
So, okay. Stay tuned for that one as well.
Yep. Watching this court case unfold.
So do you yourself have any bills you'll file by the 19th, Tacky?
Yeah, well, I file a lot of bills, as people have seen in the past, but we have some new ones. You know, I talked a little bit about this, you know, income tax deduction for people working at home.
Mm.
You know, that's kind of important. Because, you know, people's expenses have gone up because we're picking up our own costs for working. If your boss isn't picking those costs, I feel, I'm a legislator, so I'm not like a regular employee in terms of things like that because it's complicated. But my staff obviously does not get their standard employees like everybody else. And, you know, tax deduction is pretty important. I understand my friend Dr. Abe's reached out about, you know, sales tax exemption for certain PPE. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, push toward a sales tax exemption for certain types of PPE. You know, hospitals, medical centers, and not-for-profits, they don't pay sales tax anyway. But, you know, retail and the rest of us who are looking for masks and gloves.
It could help a small barbershop, maybe, or places like that, you know, if that were to pass.
Yeah, and it helps people making masks to sell them. I mean, I do require the masks have to be able to cover your mouth and nose. I mean, just not just any mask. And even, you know, things like smocks. That you can find at, you know, people in supermarkets, for example, use smocks. Mm-hmm. You know, have a minimum medical grade standard. So it's just not any piece of cloth, so to speak. So I do try to create, that's why I see certain types of PPE, they try to create these minimum standards that industry accepts. So I got, you know, that bill going around. We got a bill to look at maybe making Election Day a public holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pandemic has shown mail-in ballots are great, but mail-in ballots is under the emergency, the state emergency situation because of the way it's written in the Constitution. So, you know, down the road, you know, making the September and November election days, public holidays, will give more flexibility on people when they want to show up, as opposed to crowding after work, which is the most common.
Yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of polling places are schools.
Yes.
And depending, you know, hopefully we know we will be moving away from this rhetoric that causes fear in polling places, even among us here in Massachusetts, which I think we're very civil and fairly safe, you know, to be able to better secure, you know, polling places in the state if there's any kind of belief that there's a threat going on, you know, on the ballot machines are fixed and you know, you have to do something about it, rhetoric. So, you know, we'll, it's not an awful idea. We'll float that idea out there and see what people think. And I'm sure I'll come up with a few more. There's plenty of time to come up with a few more bills in the back of my head that will come to the front of my, much to my staff chagrin.
So you're thinking the state of emergency is probably going to be in effect for another little while.
Yeah, this is probably the longest state of emergency we've been in since time of war.
Yep.
This is what a, basically what it looks like. The reality is the fact the curve is not bending. People have seen on the news, you know, 7,000 plus on one day is the highest total we've seen, more than the first wave. Hospitals are at 87% non-ICU. ICU is well over 80%. I made the, you know, sad news of looking at the dashboard yesterday for Boston area hospitals where we live in. It's 91% capacity for non-ICU and 87% capacity for ICU. And that wasn't that long ago. It was like a week ago that was closer to 80% capacity.
Does that include the field hospitals or no?
That's just the Boston area hospital. There's no field hospital opened up yet. But if this gets creeper to 95%, the governor's going to have to open a field hospital. They're going to have to open a convention center.
Yeah.
So if people are taking this seriously, you know, and we already doubled capacity in the hospital system from this first wave. We didn't not take away that capacity. You know, if you have a major medical event and need a hospital bed, there may not be one for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it is essential for all of us to bend the curve a second time. You know, the mask, social distancing, if you can keep away from people, if you're not well. You know, right now, that's I can't express how crucial that is right now. And I think the news doesn't really say that because I don't know why. They're giving you the raw number. Oh, well, 2,300 people in hospital beds. Well, what does that mean to you? 91%, folks. Filled.
I think you're right. I think you get to be numb to these numbers after a while. They don't really have any context because you don't know what it actually means. When you get a percentage, you get a better sense, I think, for what the situation is.
Yeah. In the state, the state's dashboard on COVID gives you the day before figure because, you know, you get a day before and publish it that night and goes next day. And to the end of the day, today, we'll get the new numbers for today. So, I mean, obviously that number will fluctuate here and there, but the fact that it just keeps going up, you know, maybe drop to 90%, you know, tomorrow morning. But still, it's still large, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
So it's essential people in congregate care, people that can't go anywhere because they're in assisted living. You know, they need to get vaccinated. We don't want another Holyoke Soldier Home situation. But those that are more mobile. Able to keep an eye on our health. And again, if you're not feeling well, don't go near anybody.
Yeah, I mean, the rule of thumb is it's always COVID until you determine it's not.
That's correct. So, you know, I still don't get it with folks. I just don't. Go look at the dashboard every day on the state website. We'll have the latest statistics as of 5 p.m. the day before. So with the same day statistics, go on the website after 5 p.m., obviously, and look for yourself. I mean, this is grim. If the hospitals get overrun, then we're done. I mean, the British locked down the whole country because the hospital system was overrun. Everyone's mad over there because of the lockdown. But if you have a stroke or a heart attack, well, You don't have a bed. You could die in the parking lot.
Scotland, maybe, or Ireland, you know. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people hate it, but, I mean, you don't you feel that this is not real. Feel free to visit any hospital.
You know, or talk to any healthcare worker who's on the front lines, and they'll give it to you straight for sure.
And there's a lot of stress on these folks right now. And only we can prevent that from getting worse for our friends in the medical community. I mean, this is our responsibility. This is the responsibility of the government. This is your personal responsibility to keep the rest of us safe. And if you feel that your personal interests are more important than the lives around you, well, I mean, you know, I don't have to tell you what I think of that matter. And I think your neighbors or friends can figure it out for yourself. So if you feel you're dispensable and a potential harm to others from you, what can I say?
Exactly. How to reach out to you, Tacky?
Well, again, you can call a number at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. That's my number until they move my office, if they move my office, if we ever have to have an office again, which is also a mystery. Obviously, I've heard some people having issues with our dial-in system. Just hit anybody's staffer's number. If it goes to Tacky Chan's office and staff names come up, just pick one and leave a message. We do get our voicemails electronically transferred via email, so the staff does pick it up, and then we do discuss pretty much every day now constituent calls that come in. You can reach me by email at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. We have my Facebook, which I do not encourage using messaging because now I'm getting the spam messaging, which, by the way, I'll talk a little bit about fraud in 1 second after this.
Okay.
Because I'm getting those scam stuff on people's email, people's Facebook texts coming to me. So, State Representative Tacky Chan, we put a lot of data up there as well as tackychan.org. And there's also a form you can fill out, and we'll get those emails as well. I want to remind folks that the vaccine is free. You don't have to pay for it. You cannot skip the line by paying for it. The governor's party is roaming around in the sense that keeps shifting things here and there. And I think they're going to be shifting it even more. Do keep looking at the website. But if anybody sends you an email, phone call, a text in any language saying, you can skip the line, you have to give us money, those are all scams. And not surprised that's going around. And it's now making spam things on Facebook, where people, click on stuff and end up having computer virus. So we get these messages, all the stuff about, vaccines in different countries and whatnot, and you can't see the attachment, attachment unavailable. Don't hunt it down. Social media has become a very good place for viral scammers to try to confine you to either do damage to computer, but also to try to convince you that they can accelerate your vaccine recipient process. So,
don't fall for it.
You don't fall for it. Be very careful. You're not sure, give us a call, but no charge for vaccines, period. The priority list is the governor's priority list. I have no say on the priority list in terms of decision-making. I do express an opinion, and I do relay constituent concerns about that. If you have a constituent concern, we relay it directly to COVID Command Center. I don't have any specific decision-making process. So that means anyone that sends you an email saying they do is a scam.
Right. All right. Good advice, Tacky. Good to see you.
Good to see you. And we'll chat next week, maybe once or twice, depending on our schedule.
That's right. Sounds good. All right. Take care.
Take care.